Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. Of course, it is home of the ambitious upstart. I'm smiling especially big today because I've got someone who's been a longtime Mixergy fan, who I met in Chicago where I went to speak at Podcast Movement, a conference for podcasting. And as I came into this restaurant where the after party was, I met this guy. And I immediately said, after we talked, actually for about a sentence or two, I said, let's get out of here. Let's go talk outside. I want to hear more of what you've said to me. And the two of us ended up spending the whole night together, largely with me doing the kinds of interviews that you've seen me do on camera forever, except it was in person because he was so freaking fascinating. And so much about his life was fascinating. It's the business that we're going to talk about here today that's fascinating. It's also how he got started, even as a kid, selling candy, how he got started in chef school, hustling, selling stuff, and then that became the business that you're going to hear about today. And frankly, it's also about depression, that he was that open with me, I thought was, well, it helped me see a little bit of myself and all of our struggle in what he went through. So let me quickly introduce him. His name is Z Ali. Actually, that's the name he's going by now. We'll talk about that in the interview too. But Z Ali is the founder of the Z Group. They make custom apparel, print, and promotional products. Let me tell you what that means. When he and I were talking, he pulled out his phone, showed me his email account, and showed me this message that came in from the Hyatt, where we were actually hosting the event. And the Hyatt wanted to buy a bunch of polo shirts from him with their logo on it, and he was able to provide that for them. That's the kind of stuff that he does. And this interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first is HostGator. It's the place that hosts your website. And the second is Lead Pages. And speaking of conferences, they're having a conference. They're also inviting me to speak. It's called Converted 2016. I'd love for you to come and meet me in person the way that Z did at this conference here in Chicago. But I'll tell you more about them later in this interview. First, Z, good to have you on here, man.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I already told you, not that I needed to because you've listened for so long, that one of the first questions I'll ask you is, what's your revenue? So let's get into it. What's your revenue, dude?
Andrew, I mean, we haven't gone on our second date yet. You want to know?
I consider this a second date.
We're a private company, and I kind of want to keep that close to me.
But you were comfortable saying a minimum. You do over how much?
It's about seven figures.
So over $1 million in revenue, selling polos, hats, that kind of thing.
Yeah, merchandising, so custom swag. So when you go to a conference, an event, you'll see a lot of marketing collateral that has branding on it, whether it's a backdrop, a t-shirt, a giveaway product, a pen. And so those are the types of products we offer.
Here's what I was asking you at drinks with some friends afterwards that I feel like you didn't want to answer. And that is the margins. The margins are tiny, aren't they?
Yes and no.
Because a big part of your expense goes to paying for the actual polo, right? A big part of your expense goes to the machines and the people who put the logos on the polos and the hats, right?
Certainly, yeah. So our industry, our goal really would be to hit between 40 and 45%. But now it varies. You know,
40 and 45% net or gross?
Gross.
Gross, okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, it could drop down to 20%. To 33%. It really depends. Sometimes we can make over 200%. And the variables are based off of the, you know, how urgent you need the order. Do you need it tomorrow morning or do I have 6 months to produce it? There's just so many variables. If I'm bidding on a government bid, you know, you got to come in really aggressive to earn their business. Okay. But we don't try to focus on selling on price, really. We have more of a consultative approach. I mean, we don't even have e-commerce on our site, so you can't even go and buy a t-shirt off of our website.
Why not? Why lose the sales that would come in from people just clicking a button and buying?
Sure. So we're a B2B business, right? We want to offer that consultation. I want to see you face-to-face, understand your company goals, what you're trying to achieve, and then give you something that's actually going to give you an ROI versus, hey, here, buy some t-shirts and pens and good luck. I'm looking to build a long-term relationship with each of my clients. And if they succeed, I succeed because then they're going to keep paying me more and more and they're going to keep coming back year after year versus an online transaction where it's really no human contact. It's give me your credit card number and here's your stuff. See you later.
I see. You're really big on putting a phone number up on your site and getting people to call up and buy from you that way.
Absolutely.
You're wearing a nice suit. You're wearing a bow tie. I feel so underdressed. I told you I took all my clothes home before the conference and just forgot to bring them back here afterwards. So I'm just doing this in a t-shirt. But when I see you in a suit, a nice pressed white shirt and a bow tie, and you're sitting from your home doing this interview, I know that there's a reason for it. Why the bow tie? Why be so dressed?
Sure. So, I mean, I always dress for success. Also, the bow tie is really, it's a part of my personal brand. I make it a point to wear a bow tie and dress sharp all the time, anywhere I go, because it leaves an impression, and that's what I want to do. And so if I attend the, you know, podcast or conference next year and the year after, I promise you people will identify me with the bow tie. And it's a lot to do with networking as well. So if I genuinely don't enjoy the conversation I have with someone, but I really want to earn their business because they fit, you know, they qualify as a good prospect, you know, I'll send them the generic email. I'll try to make it as custom as I can, but I'll always put in my signature line, P.S. I'm the guy that wore that purple bow tie. And it'll make you recall who I was.
I see.
Not many people want to actually put on a bow tie and stand out. I'm willing to put myself out there.
And it's always a purple bow tie.
No, I've got dozens of bow ties.
I see. Yeah, I saw. It really did stand out. Even, I think it was the next day at lunch, you were just in jeans, a shirt, and a bow tie. No jacket, not a suit or anything. Am I right?
Yeah. So it's always got to be a bow tie.
I asked you how you got started with this, and you said your parents, you're from where?
From Pakistan.
Pakistan. And your parents had big dreams for you. They wanted you to be what? To go to what kind of school and be what when you grew up?
Well, like most Pakistani Indian parents, they want you to be a doctor or a lawyer. And of course, it's totally something I was going to run away from.
And then you instead went to what school?
So I ended up going to culinary school to be a chef.
Did you actually like cooking? Do you enjoy it now? Do you do it?
I absolutely love to cook. I'm very passionate about it. In fact, long term, I'll just travel through Europe and just go restaurant to restaurant because I think cooking is such a fun journey and brings people together, and I love it.
Okay, but there's something else that you love. You love hustling, you love selling, and it was in culinary school that you started this business. But before culinary school, you were hustling so much that you were selling. You started telling me, yes, of course, you sold candy, right?
Of course.
You also sold what as a kid?
I sold loose cigarettes. I sold a lot of odd things.
Wait, loose cigarettes, meaning you'd buy a pack of cigarettes, mm-hmm. and then you'd sell the individual cigarettes.
The individual cigarettes.
Which is illegal in many ways. First of all, I don't think in the U.S. you're allowed to sell loose cigarettes. I always know I'm in a third world country when they're selling individual cigarettes, right? And second, you shouldn't be selling cigarettes at all, right? And third, you're probably underage.
Yeah, I was, I'd say 14, 15.
Okay. And who would you sell these cigarettes to?
So my parents had a restaurant on the west side of the city, like Madison, California. I would consider it kind of the hood. And I would buy the packs from a guy who would drive to Indiana and bring back boxes of Newports. And I would buy each box for about $3.50, $4 a pack. And I would just sell them outside the restaurant or at the corner of the restaurant.
Okay.
50 cents a piece. And that was my little side hustle.
And what did your parents think about this future doctor, future lawyer selling Lucy cigarettes on the corner?
Honestly, my parents didn't really say much. They weren't really around too much. Okay. Most people don't understand that food service is not, it's not a job. It's not a career. It's truly a lifestyle. And you have to really love it and be passionate about it. So my parents worked all the time. They were really never around in my life because they wanted to put food on the table, and they had obligations and other things going on. And so I grew up in a position where I just did whatever I wanted.
Okay.
And no one really said anything to me. And if they did, I probably didn't listen. I was probably a very disobedient child.
Okay.
I did what I wanted.
All right. And so what else did you sell as a kid? And we'll get into what happened in culinary school that started you off on this journey.
Sure. At one point, I sold women's push-up bras. I've sold butt pads, corsets. I've sold bottles of juices that were $100 each.
Okay.
You name it, I've sold it.
I got to ask you about all of those. Where did you sell the $100 bottle of juice?
So I was selling them at my school while I was in culinary school. And that business completely failed. I was able to sell it successfully to women who were pregnant. or soon to have a child. So this bottle of juice had the top five berries in the world. So like noni, pomegranate, acai, goji. It just had all these awesome nutrients, and you took 2 ounces a day. That's why it was so expensive. And I quickly learned that that was very expensive and people didn't want to pay $100.
And so you were walking around with these bottles selling them?
Yeah, so I had like a catalog and I would walk around with the bottles and I would just ask all my teachers. In fact, I sold them to my teachers.
And you would just go to the teacher and say, I have this special bottle.
Yeah,
you want to buy one? And if they did, you just give them the bottle right there?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd give them the bottle right there because I had to buy it up front and inventory some of it. And if they wanted more, I'd have to order it in.
Okay. Some people would feel really awkward going to the teacher and trying to sell them on a bottle of $100 juice, or frankly, on anything.
Sure.
You didn't feel any of that awkwardness?
No, because I wanted money. I was very money hungry my whole life. You know, I watched my parents struggle so much, and I swore to myself that, you know, as I got older, I was never going to be in that position.
I see.
Yeah.
I picture you then every time you wanted to go and sell something to a teacher, you thought, this is my way out. This is my future. I'm going to be so much better than my parents if I have the courage to go do this, and more than courage, if I have the ability to sell them on it.
Yeah, just didn't care. I would sell you anything. I mean, I had no shame.
What's the butt thing that you sold?
Okay, so I'm actually upset that this exists. So it's a butt pad. It's just like cushion padding that women wear, you know, as an undergarment, and it enhances their butts
look bigger.
Right. It makes their butt look bigger.
Yeah. I don't need that in the world either. But who would you sell that to?
So I completely failed at that. Women didn't trust me. I think I was like 18 or 19, and someone hooked me up with this company, and they gave me this catalog of products, which had the juices and all these women products. And I would pitch it and show women and stuff, and you know, you would get the smirk and the smile, like, get out of here. And so I completely, you know, failed at selling those. I was more successful at the juices.
Okay, and even the juices weren't a huge hit.
No, they weren't. They were too expensive.
And then a friend of yours tells you about, what is it called, the jacket that a chef wears? Is it just called a jacket?
Yeah, a chef coat.
A chef coat. So what did your friend tell you about the chef code that led you to create the Z Group?
Sure. So my good friend Manny, he was bugging me for a little bit to check out some chef codes he had access to. He was buying them from some guy, and he's like, Z, I know you're the guy who can sell these for me. And so I finally said, all right, well, show me what you've got. And so I remember walking outside of the school, going to his trunk, and looking at the coats, and we were getting them for dirt cheap. And we were sourcing them all from the flea market. And so I said, all right, well, you know, let me see how I can sell these. And so the first thing I do is I go to the bookstore, see what they were paying, what they were charging the students for the chef coats and our cost. We were getting them for almost nothing.
I see.
And so we decided to start selling chef coats and just hitting up all the students at the school.
And the reason that Manny knew to bring these coats to you is because Manny just knew, Z's my guy, he sells everything. If I have push-up bras, he's going to sell them. If I have butt enhancers, he's going to sell them. I happen to have coats. He happens to be in culinary school. These chef coats are going to be perfect for him. That's the thought.
Yeah, I guess I asked him about this, actually, and he's like, yeah, you just seem like someone who you can hustle and go sell. Okay.
All right, and so you bought it first, and then you sold it how?
So I literally went classroom to classroom. So I was a student there, right? So I would go to every single class I had, and I would talk to every single student and say, hey, do you want to buy chef coats? Do you want to buy chef coats? And people would just pay me cash, and then I would give them a coat. Eventually, I just asked all my professors. I was like, hey, chefs, can I just come to your class before class starts, like 10 minutes early, and then do a presentation to the class? I'll help save all the students a lot of money. And they were like, totally. And so I started hitting up every single classroom at the start of every semester. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I still do that.
You still go into classrooms at the culinary school where you used to be a student and ask, can I speak to your class about how I have chef coats that are cheaper than the ones that are sold in the school store?
Absolutely. And the bookstore hates me.
And they're still okay with you in the school doing this?
They're okay with it because they love me, because I've built such a strong relationship.
That's what I was going to say, because most schools don't want people peddling stuff. They don't want you walking in and trying to sell something, and then someone else is going to come in after you and say, well, I've got this great cut of beef, and someone else is saying, I've got these knives, right? Yeah. They don't want that. When they love you, you're a thought out person. How did you get the school to like you so much, to love you, as you say, so much that they allow you to do this?
Well, it wasn't always that way.
When wasn't it that way?
No, I remember my first semester in school, I got kicked out of almost all of my classes. I ended up going to culinary school because I landed a job working for Classic Residence by Hyatt. It's a senior living facility owned by Hyatt Hotels. Mm-hmm. When I was 15, as a busboy. And I worked my way up there from a busboy to a server to a dishwasher, okay, to a prep cook to a line cook. And when I was 18, my senior year in high school, my chef sat me down and said, "Hey, Z, why don't you go to college?" And so, of course, I laughed at them because my parents were broke and I refused to be in debt. And so I was like, no way. I'm not doing that. And so I was lucky enough to convince them to pay for it.
Convince who?
Hyatt, so my chefs.
So they said you should go to culinary school. You said, why don't you pay for it? They said, okay, sure.
Yeah. So it wasn't like, yes, right away. It was, hey, we have scholarship opportunities here, here, and here. You should apply for them. And because I had so much experience already working in the hotel, I think I've got 100% acceptance for every scholarship I applied for. I had so much money, I had to give money back. Okay. I applied to one school, Triton College, and I never visited the campus. It's a community college in River Grove. I really didn't care. I genuinely think I went to culinary school because I wanted to get this piece of paper to show my mom that, hey, your son went to college and I want you to be proud. I think it did it more for her than for me.
Okay. And then eventually you'd go back to selling and hustling and not being as bad off as your parents were by working so long and still not being rich.
Definitely.
All right. But take me then back to the school. Why does the school like you so much that they allow you to come in and sell this stuff? And then I've got to talk about my sponsor.
Okay, sure. So they allow me because they trust me. They trust me. I fixed up my act. I didn't get in trouble anymore. I was getting in trouble because school was too easy for me because I was a trained cook already. And so I just flirt with girls and I didn't know better.
Okay.
And eventually I fixed up my act because I didn't want to get kicked out of school. And so I just did the right things. I was very accountable. I made sure that if I said something, I would do it.
But that's what you have to do to be a good student. That's not what you have to do if you want people to like you enough to let you sell in their class. You did something else. The guy who wears a bow tie intelligently with a plan behind it must have done something to win over the teachers in the school system to allow you to go in.
Sure. So I simply said, hey, I'm going to save your students a lot of money. And I think that was the real hook. I was saving students money. I was at a community college. I was saving them time and money. I would personally fill up my duffel bag with uniforms, show up to every class, take orders, let them try on all their sizes, get fitted, and then I would hand deliver all their uniforms at a time to all the students.
I see. And when you see someone go through that kind of effort, you admire them a little bit. You root for them. You want to help them out. Is that what's going on?
I think so. I think I started to really grow on them. And they're like, yeah, we love Z. And you know, if I said I was going to show up at a 7 a.m. class, I did. If I said I was going to deliver something, I did. And it wasn't easy. I mean, I was driving like almost an hour away to go to the school to deliver these.
I also get the sense that there's more to your charm that's more thought out than we've gotten to here. And if you come up with it throughout this interview, bring it up. I want to understand. I want to deconstruct. All right, let me talk about my sponsor. But before I do, I'm looking at – you went to Triton College?
Yep.
In Chicago?
Yep, it's River Grove, yeah. Chicago.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking at some of the classes they offered in their culinary training program, and it includes nutrition, which sounds interesting, food preparation, which of course would be included, menu writing, which I never would have expected, but sounds really fascinating. That sounds like the copywriting of chefs.
It is,
right? How do you is there something about being persuasive or convincing in that class?
Certainly, yeah. I mean,
what do you remember?
So I remember a lot, actually. So if you're putting a burger on a menu, you don't want to just put cheeseburger or cheeseburger with bacon. Maybe you want to say, you know, an herb infused burger, or you want to add some with an aioli sauce. You want to add another layer of detail and element to help persuade that person to purchase that burger.
I see.
And so there's a lot of keywords that you can use. There's actually, we have our own dictionary of words that we can infuse similar to in copywriting.
What are some of those words?
Let's see. I have to think about this. I haven't written a menu in a while.
All right. Give it some thought.
Yeah. Like chilled shrimp instead of just shrimp. So if you're at a buffet, you're going to put chilled shrimp instead of shrimp buffet.
I don't need shrimp, but my sense, having seen it my whole life, is it's chilled. It's always chilled. Am I right? No, really? Okay.
For a buffet, yeah, you can have it chilled. Probably it's like a terrible example. Let me get back to you.
My sense is what you're doing is you're adding an extra level of detail, but you're also promoting that detail.
Certainly.
Chilled shrimp doesn't seem like the most amazing thing to come out, but same thing with aioli on a burger. It's not that hard to put aioli on a burger. It's not the most special and most expensive sauce, but you're right. When I see it on there, it feels more interesting. And when I see that something is infused with something else, the word infused catches my eye. Even though it's not that hard to do, it feels more special.
Sure. Like a luscious, mouth-watering burger, or just any sort of words to help, you know, excite you about what's on that menu.
Yeah, there's something about mouth-watering that always gets me. It makes my mouth literally water, like without me wanting it, uncontrollably. I wasn't going to say uncontrollably because that sounds like I'm drooling everywhere. All right, my sponsor is a company called Lead Pages. If you're listening to this, you should get on a flight and come out to the Lead Pages conference. It's called Converted 2016. One of the reasons why I'd love for you to do it is so that you and I get to meet the way that Z and I got to meet, and hopefully we'll have a long drink, conversation, and really just get into what you're working on. And I'd love for you, just like Z did, to get to meet some of the other people who I get to know at the conference. That's my goal. That's my ulterior motive. Basically, they are paying me to tell you who's listening to come out and hang with me. I love that they're willing to do that. But once you come out, you're not just going to get to see me. You're going to get to meet other people like Mark Maron, who is an incredible podcaster. You're going to get to meet the founder of Lead Pages, Clay Collins. I've known him for years. I think he was at the very first Scotch Night here at Mixergy. Pat Flynn, the founder of Smart Passive Income. In my interview with him, by the way, Z, I said to him, I said, Pat, I have to tell you why I never had you on Mixergy before. And I said, it's the name, Smart Passive Income. It turned me off. I was a little worried that maybe you were a guy who's telling people how to make money overnight while they sleep. And that's not the kind of program I'm doing. And then I researched him and I found out he wasn't at all like that. And I had him on. We had a great interview. I got to sit down with him at the conference where you and I met. He will be at this conference also. And one of the things that I liked about getting to know him in person is what he's like in person. The small details that you don't – I think I'm maybe a little cynical because there's so much Z in my work here where I have to review people and say, are they good or are they not?
Sure.
When I go to see Pat Flynn, and as he's getting off the stage and people are trying to get his attention – I say, Pat, I'm sorry to interrupt this long line of people, but I lost the cable that I need to connect to the projector at this conference. Do you happen to have one? And he goes, not only sure, but he goes into his backpack. He always has his backpack with him. He unfolds a special binder that he has for this stuff in it, has a special sleeve just for this cable. He pulls out the special cable with lots of different inputs in it just in case the projector has some weird output. And then he hands it over to me. I realize how good this person is. And then when I want to bring it back and find him, he goes, Andrew, you can keep it. I can get another. I want you to always have this. That's why I go. I want to get to see the details of how these people run their lives and how they run their businesses. If you come out to Converted 2016, you're going to get to meet a lot of these people. Here's the one theme that we all have in common. Everybody who's coming to that conference is looking to grow their conversions. And that means the people who hit their web pages, they want to get more of them to join their mailing list. That means the more people who go on their mailing list, we want to find out ways to get them to convert into buyers and do it right. And we want to understand how others are doing it. So we're there to learn from the speakers on stage. We're there to have drinks with the speakers on stage and get to know them and continue to get to know them afterwards. And we're there to meet everybody in that audience because everybody in the audience is working on conversions. And we want to meet them and learn from them and work with them. If you come to this conference, don't use the standard link that everyone else is using. Nope. I have a special one for you. They're going to give you up to $250 off the price of your ticket. Go to this special URL. It is leadpages.net/Mixergy. Leadpages.net/Mixergy. And of course, email me your receipt so that we can connect and meet in person. I want to give you my phone number, or Z and I were connecting using Facebook Messenger. I'll find some way for all of us to connect so we can meet in person. If you're hearing my voice, come out to Converted 2016. Use my special link and let's meet in person. That's leadpages.net/Mixergy. By the way, when I go to conferences, Z, I have a few goals. I don't so much care about the speakers on stage. I go if there's something I want to force myself to learn. I go if there's someone who I know who's speaking and I want to get to know them a little bit better, and so it gives me something to talk to them about. But largely, I go to meet the audience. I want to know what their problems are. I want to know what they're working on. I want to know like little secrets that they don't feel comfortable talking about. Why do you go? Why did you go to this conference that you and I met at?
So it was funny. It's a podcaster's conference, and I have no podcast. I actually have no interest in starting one. I was more there so I can find awesome people like you to get on their podcast. And so, mission accomplished. I was just hoping to run into some awesome people, learn from them, share my story, inspire someone, and have a good time.
You've been asked to do other podcasts, but you've said no. Why not?
I've said no because I wanted to work with and be on the best podcasts. I didn't want to start at the very bottom and with a small audience. I just wanted to go for the bang. And this is my very first podcast, and it's a pleasure to, you know, it's an honor to be on your podcast.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's much better to start off with a big podcast and then show that to everyone else than to start with a small podcast and then go to all the bigger ones and say, look, here's where I was before. Because nobody wants to take a person who's just on a tiny podcast and doesn't really have much going for them and say, all right, this is appropriate.
Right.
All right, let's continue with the story. I see how you're selling these chef coats, but how do you build up from there to printing up polo shirts or logos on polo shirts for the Hyatt? What's the next move up from there?
Sure. So the way it gets started, from just one product to now over a million products, it's funny how that all happened. So while I was selling chef coats one at a time out of my trunk in school, I had one of my professors or someone who worked at the school, actually, he referred me to another college and said, hey, I used to work at this school. I think they need uniforms. I'll let them know you're going to stop by and you guys should work together. And I said, of course. So I grabbed my duffel bag, filled it up with coats, and I show up to the school, and the chef looks at my price sheet that I typed up. I mimicked a restaurant menu because I didn't know better. So it said like chef coat, dot, 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 and the price. And so the chef said, well, I need to place my order right away. And I said, perfect. Well, let's go to my trunk and you take whatever you want. And he looked at me like I was crazy. I had lost my mind. He was speaking in a foreign language. He's like, you need a W-9, a 1099, terms, references. I was like, I couldn't comprehend anything he said. But for some reason, I went to Walmart that week and bought a voice recorder. And I secretly taped the entire conversation, went home, played it, and I went to Google. I typed in W-9. I clicked on the very first ad that was running. I didn't realize it was an ad. I had about $1,600-ish in my bank account. I clicked the first ad, and I gave them about $800. Within 2 or 3 days, I was a legal company. At this point, I didn't know I was obligated to pay taxes. I didn't know what my responsibilities were as a business owner. All I knew was I had that one piece of paper that he needed for me to sell to him.
And the W-9 is what gives you your, I think, your tax ID number, which is what they use when they pay you.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's all you had, and then you were ready to go and start a business.
Yeah, and so that was a struggle because we were sourcing these coats from the flea market. And so now I needed to find a reputable manufacturer, and where in the world is this coming from? And that was an entire journey to figure that out.
How do you find a manufacturer?
So what I did was I was buying from this flea market, this guy who was getting seconds. And what seconds are products that can't be put on retail shelves because they have minor imperfections. So maybe the tags are missing, or maybe there's a little smudge on the jacket and it can't be put in retail shelves. So it has to be sold off the market. And so what I was going to do is put tracers on his truck to see where he was actually getting the product from, because it obviously was coming. It was coming from Guatemala. I could read in the tags, okay. But it was being warehoused somewhere in Illinois.
Okay, but you're going to put a tracer on his truck. That's a little psycho.
Yeah, that's a little crazy. But I was getting desperate. I needed to find out where he was getting these coats from and how I could get the perfect coats, because I didn't have time to sit there and find all the misperfections and hide the tags and cover it up or clean it up. I mean, I remember at one point I bought almost a pallet of chef coats, took them to my house. My mom and I opened up, took the plastic bags off, washed every single coat one at a time,
wow.
ironed them, folded them back, and placed them in the bags.
Wow.
And we sold them one at a time. And it was... It
That's
was
pretty psycho too, but admirable psycho.
Yeah, I'm a crazy guy.
So why couldn't you just go, I'm on Alibaba.com. The first result that comes up here is someone who apparently has been on Alibaba for 7 years. They're in Shenzhen. And I can get a chef coat from them for $8.93 and up.
Sure.
But I have to order 500 sets minimum. Why couldn't you just do that?
So 500 sets is a lot. I only hit $800.
Okay.
So I started with the balance. It was about $800. Since I had $1,600, I paid half of it towards the LLC, and I had a balance of $800. So one, I needed money, so I started applying for every credit card I can get. My credit limits were $200 to maybe $500 on each card.
And that
was a struggle. And so to answer your question, the way I eventually found the manufacturer was I spent more than 100 hours researching on Google every single word, every single association with that brand, with that company, and eventually I found them. What was so difficult was they use a different name so that people can't find them.
I see.
And so eventually I did find them. I called them and said, hey, I need to sell your products and I need them now.
Okay.
And they laughed at me and they're like, who are you? And, you know, send us your terms and your credit references. And I was like, none of those.
What'd you do?
What's a credit reference? They're like, well, just ask your other vendors. I was like, I have no other vendors. You're my first. And so I was lucky enough. They set me up on terms eventually, but I did have to pay my first PO with about 5 cards, which really, you know, annoyed them.
but they rang it all up.
They did. Yeah.
I think it's funny the way that you were looking for a chef coat like supplier is the way in the drug movies I see them looking for the connect. They always want to go up the chain to the connect, the guy who's got all the stuff, all the drugs.
Yeah.
All right, we're still now talking small ball. What's the move that gets you into the bigger leagues?
Sure. So I'd say chef coats is the bigger leagues.
But it's not just you buying from this one supplier, selling it one at a time that got you to where you are today, is it? Or was there a next big thing that allowed you to grow?
So I think the big pivotal point was where I was able to really take off and start growing and making a lot more money was networking. I hustled my ass off. Like, I went to every event I could possibly go to. I was a part of the largest chef organization in the country, the ACF. And what I did was I actively went to every single meeting. I eventually was managing marketing on their board. I got to know every single person I can get to know. And eventually, I was able to get a customer who has a really successful culinary school. And they spent, I want to say, 6 months into my business, they spent about 6 figures with me. And that was really like the point where I was like, this is super cool.
I see. Now you got a real growing business. And it was all that networking. So let's break down what you did. One of the things that you did was you joined the association, but you weren't just a member. You wanted to rise up in the membership. You told me that people keep asking you, how old are you? So let me ask you now, how old are you?
I'm 27. I just turned 27.
Just turned 27. And at the time that you did this, how old were you?
I was about 20 years old, I'd say.
Okay, so they don't want 20-year-olds. They don't even want 24-year-olds, from what I understand, joining associations and having leadership position, not at the higher level, do they?
They don't, but I was the baby, and I stood out, and everyone loves the baby, right? So
they all want to help.
They want to help.
Okay, and are you? Like, I'm not good at asking for help. Are you good at asking for help?
It's funny. Now I'm very good about it. I will ask. I'll make all the phone calls I need to get the answers I need and to move forward and grow my business. I was really scared. And when I first started, I was more going in for, hey, Andrew, can I be on your podcast? Versus I didn't even ask you. Right.
I see.
And so I learned that the hard way, but by just showing my face at every event that they had, people just start to get to know who I am and what type of person I was. And I'd be able to slowly work my way in, build relationships, and sell my products.
I know you're really good at networking. Tell me about some of the techniques that you use to network. And I'll tell you about one of mine. You actually saw it. I did it intentionally around you. What I usually do is once I'm out of earshot of the person I'm talking to, I talk to my phone, right? And you saw me do it. I just go into my phone, I hit the voice dictation button, and I just start making a list of all the notes that I have about you, everything that I remember. So it'd be something like, I'm actually looking what I said. He sold all kinds of things growing up, from candy to cigarettes. And it even has the number TWO cigarettes because, you know, dictation doesn't get things exactly right. He even sold pirated CDs, says he's not proud of it, having done that. Push-up bras, butt pad process. I don't know what that means, but, you know, I'm just writing this in the phone using my voice. He used to screenshot my logo to inspire him. And it just all goes into my phone. By the way, what did you do with my screenshot? With the screenshot of the Mixer G logo?
Yeah, so every time I saw your face or Mixer G logo, I would just screenshot it as a reminder. I need to be on that guy's podcast. I need to get to know him. He needs to know who I am. And so...
I see. And so where would you put the logo to inspire you and remind you to think about being here?
So they would just go on my desktop, and I'm pretty sure I have ADD, so then my desktop would pile up, and then I'd throw them into a folder. Got like it. I'm going to get back to it, and then like I kept doing it.
I think that's like Command-Shift-4 puts it on your desktop, right? And then you're on Mac. Yeah, I just did it right now, and it went to my desktop. Did it? Yes, it went to my desktop. All right, I see. That's pretty cool. So tell me about what your techniques are. How do you get to know people better? How do you maintain contact with them? Give me some tips.
Okay, so the most important thing I think about networking is you don't want to go in for the sale, right? Everyone that's at an event is looking to grow their company, start their business, or just grow in general. And if I go in with the mentality of, hey, I want to sell more t-shirts or more mugs or pens or whatever this is, I'm going to turn people off because they're there to sell something too. And so instead of pitching my products and services, what I do is I share my story. And that's exactly what I did with you. I stopped you, and I think I asked you. I said, "Hey, you know, I'm Z. I really enjoy your podcast." I complimented you, and then I asked you for 45 seconds. And I think after 30 seconds, you asked me to go outside so we can have more one-on-one time and actually talk. And so stories are memorable. What you do, I probably won't remember after I leave.
And so. You actually, what you did was you didn't say, "I only want 45 seconds." That would have felt a little bit off-putting to me, I think.
Okay.
But you said, "I've got the 45-minute pitch about what I do," or something like that.
45 seconds.
Right? Yeah. 45 seconds, excuse me. And that's what made me realize. I said, "All right, let's see this." And it's probably not going to be that good because he just told me he's about to give me a pitch that he's worked on. It's better if you just give the pitch without saying how much you worked on it. But then you talked about how you leveled up in life. You talked about what you were selling, and you... The story was well-crafted and convincing. Do you remember what you said?
So I don't like – it's not very memorized. I kind of just – it's off the cuff. I said something along the lines of I gave you a compliment, and then you know I said I started a company with $800 while I was in culinary school, and I worked my way up. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I ended up in culinary school with one product, and now we offer over 1 million products.
Mm-hmm. And you told the story of how you, I think a little bit of how you sold it. All right, so I get what you're getting at. You're telling people stories. But a lot of times people don't have something they could give you right away. Do you have a process for staying in touch with them?
Yeah, so having a CRM would be phenomenal. So a CRM is pretty much, for those who may not know, is just a software that allows you to manage all of your contacts.
Of course, if they don't know it, they shouldn't be listening to Mixer G. Can you say that? You should be listening to, I don't know, Amateur Hour podcast.
Yeah.
But I do that. I explain what things are all the time too, out of habit. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So if there's someone that you're looking to build a relationship with, someone you want to sell, someone you want to get to know, you want to make sure you document what you learn about those people. So for instance, if you'd like to maybe do business with me, and if I had a podcast and you wanted to be a guest, what you can do is listen to this interview, learn about, what I like, right? I'm into chefs, I'm into selling t-shirts, and you can find a hook or find something that connects to my story and use that as a hook to convince me to talk to you. Okay. Versus, hey, like I can't email, you know, I couldn't email you and say, hey, can you put me on your show? I would need to say, I'm a big fan. I really enjoyed this podcast because it inspired me to do this and this. And because of your show, I've done this.
I see.
It's more personable versus a can, so it needs to be super custom.
Okay. I think I told you that before we talked, I was on a call with a guy named Mike Yang who created a software called ManyChat. And I love the software. Apparently, he's a fan of Mixer G, and I've been using it. But so he said, Andrew, I see you're using it. Let's get on a call if you have any tech support issues, which I did. And we got on a call, but I realized that before we got on a call, he went back and listened to one of the interviews to just refresh his memory about it so he can bring it up. And it wasn't until days later that I realized he didn't just happen to listen to that. He intentionally went back to listen to prepare for the call, which was hella impressive. All right. I want to talk about the bad stuff now. We'll come back from this next commercial break. We're going to talk about the depression because it seems like things were going well, but it didn't. They weren't on the inside. And I want to talk about the name change, what's going on there. The sponsor that I'm going to tell everyone about first is a company called HostGator. And I'm going to be honest and tell people what you told me before you started. And that was that you wanted to switch away from HostGator to a company that offered security. You wanted security. Did you ever get a virus, by the way?
Never.
Never. I did. I got a virus on WordPress. I had no idea that websites could get viruses. It was awful. It was awful because not only do people get rerouted to Viagra ads on your site and they think that maybe you've sold out and now you're in the Viagra business, but then Google search results started saying Mixergy, like home of the Viagra or something. And then, of course, because you're selling Viagra like illegally on your site through spammy ways, Google starts to punish you. So it's your audience getting punished, you're getting punished, and Google making it all so much worse. It's awful. Well, one of the things that people don't realize is that you should actually be protecting your site. You should install backup software on your website. You should do antivirus on your website. Go figure, antivirus for a freaking website. WordPress is getting better and better so that it's not as easy to get a virus as it was when I got it. But what you might want to do is get managed WordPress hosting. That means that they're going to upgrade your plugin. So if there's a security hole in one of your plugins and it gets a new upgrade and you forget to upgrade it yourself, you forget to install the upgrade, well, you want someone to do it for you. You want someone to manage your site to make sure that you've got the backups running, make sure that you actually are protecting yourself from viruses. Well, I've been talking for the longest time about HostGator's basic package. It's inexpensive. It's easy to get started. Within minutes, you can have everything up and running. I actually had one of my members hear an idea from a Mixergy interview and go to HostGator, start his website, and then he even had HTTPS URL on the pages that needed it because he was collecting data. So this guy who was an amateur was able to do it fast. But if anyone wants to level up, HostGator's got that too. They have managed WordPress hosting. Go look at the number one managed WordPress hosting company. See what they charge. These guys have been getting away with murders for years. Managed WordPress hosting. They charge you an arm and a leg because they do all kinds of stuff like upgrade your plugins, protect you from viruses, and because no one was doing it for a long time. At some point, I think in the last year, HostGator, the giant in this space, said, these guys are making bank with this. Let's just offer it. It doesn't cost that much to do it. And so now they have managed WordPress hosting. So if you're out there and you don't like your hosting company, you want to switch to HostGator and you want all this, just ask them. Say, I want managed WordPress hosting. Andrew's been talking about it. And if you just want basic WordPress hosting and you're comfortable in upgrading plugins yourself, frankly, it's an easy button. You click a link and you upgrade it. If you're comfortable with all that, or frankly, you're just getting started and you don't care because you need to get started fast, well, HostGator is a fast, easy, inexpensive solution. All you do is I'm going to give you a URL where you get a big discount on their already super low price. It is HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. I'm looking at the page right now. Right now, the offer is $4.87 a month. And again, you can upgrade from there if you want managed WordPress hosting for a little bit more. And they're going to give you $100 in AdWords offer. They're going to give you $50 search credit. They're going to make it super easy for you to get unlimited email addresses. I got to talk, by the way, to our producer, Jeremy. He's got a side business. That guy's email address says support at his URL, support at Inspired Insider. He should have jeremy@inspiredinsider.com, hi@inspiredinsider.com, not support at when he's like at a conference telling people how to email him. Well, with HostGator, you can get infinite email addresses. So you can get all that and so much more. All right, go check him out at HostGator.com/Mixergy. And Z, if you want, you can switch over to that, to the managed WordPress hosting. And anyone out there, if you have a site that's WordPress, they will migrate you to HostGator for free. They'll do it for you. Just sit back, have a beer, they'll do the work for you. Cool. Z, do you hear that my voice sounds tired? There's like a little exhaustion in my voice. Do you hear it?
Barely.
It's a little raspy. And the reason it is because I came back from that conference and immediately jumped into potty training with my kid. In fact, I was supposed to come to work yesterday, and I said, screw it. My kid needs me for potty training. I'm staying home. I immediately texted my assistant and said, please, any messages, any issues that are going on, resolve it with the team. I'm spending time with my kid going through potty training. And it's one of the toughest things that we've had to do. But I love that. I feel like there's so much bonding in dealing with the difficult times. At the end of the day, that little bugger peed in a potty exactly like he's supposed to and then was jumping up and down on the bed. He's like 2 years old, jumping up and down on the bed, saying, rock and roll will never die, rock and right? Because I happened to be humming it earlier in the day. I love that about this business. I love that I can actually just say last minute, my kid's going through potty training. He needs an extra day. I'm going to stay home. The nanny can actually can help me, but I'm going to be here with him. And we'll sit and talk about choo-choo trains while he potties. That's where the voice is coming from. Let's get into it. I've talked about why I changed my name. Can you talk about why you changed yours?
Sure. So Z is more strategic for branding. So it's short for Zeeshan.
Is Zeeshan a Pakistani name?
It is.
It is. I didn't know that. Okay. So that's strategic. Continue.
Yeah. So typically when I meet someone at an event, I'll introduce myself as Z and they'll pause and ask me to repeat it. And they'll say it a few times and we'll decide whether it's Z alone as a letter or is it Z-E-E. And we end up saying it about 6-7 times within 10 seconds. And that's enough for me to be memorable and for them to remember my name.
I saw that. Uh-huh.
And so that's the reason.
Okay.
So changing my last name. So my legal last name is Bimani, and I've decided to change it to Ali, which is my mother's last name. I've decided to do that for a lot of reasons. One big one, it's kind of hard to talk about, but I've really never had, I'd say, my parents around growing up. I've kind of been solo my whole life and have figured out things the hard way. And I never had my father in my life.
Why not? What do you mean? It sounds like he was working. You were on the corner selling Lucy's next to him. It seemed like you guys were close physically at least. No?
No, that's far from it. Unfortunately, the one memory that keeps coming into my mind when I think of my father is I remember calling him. You know, whether it was twice a week, three times a week, and I would just call him to ask him something, and I would typically get the same answer all the time. I'm busy. I have to go. And he would hang up. And that's what I would get all the time. And so I was like, at one point, I was like, you know, I'm never going to call him. Just going to figure it out. And so he's just never been there for whatever reason. You know, I'm not upset with him. I forgive him, whatever.
I don't know about that. I got to be honest with you. I'm not upset with him would mean you just leave Bimani as a last name and just keep calling yourself Z. There's something else there. Like, we're at a place where you have total control here. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. But I'll tell you, when you look at the people you admire the most, the ones who will be on like the Howard Stern show or even on Oprah, right? Or even in casual conversation, they're the ones who don't hold back at the tough things. They're the ones who say, it's a tough thing for me to talk about and that's why I'm going to do it. I'm not going to be a lifeless person here. I'm going to be a person who opens himself up a little bit more so you feel a connection with them. So it's up to you. There's something else here and you could go into it if you want.
Yeah. I mean, so my parents, I mean, I grew up in the food service business. Right. And so like I explained, it's a lifestyle. I guess I don't think my father had his priorities straight. I think family was not on it wasn't on the radar.
Okay.
And so it was more food on the table, working and, now, that sounds great. Yeah, your father's working, you know, and to put food in your mouth. But it's not cool. Or I was really pissed off for the longest time why my father didn't show up to my graduation, high school, eighth grade, high school, college. Yeah. That kind of stings, right, when he's too busy to make time to go to a graduation, when he's too busy to come watch you play basketball. When he's just too busy to answer his phone call. And so, you know, I just knew he just didn't want me in his life. And so I was kind of, I just grew real thick skin and said,
was he ever rude to you beyond like hanging up the phone, which is pretty rude to just hang up the phone on your kid when he's asking to talk to you. Was there even worse than that? Was it open or open hostility or open?
No, I would say every time he hung up on me, he was genuinely busy. He was occupied with something, and that whatever it was took priority over me. And so he was never hostile towards me. I mean,
just not there, not at all accessible.
Never there. Yeah.
Was there one time when you were in trouble and you could have used him and he wasn't there?
If I were in trouble, I probably wouldn't call him.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't. That's the last place I would call because I'm so used to the, I'm busy, I can't talk right now. And so if I need something, no, I won't call him.
And how did he feel when he found out that you were changing your name?
Well, I haven't like formally announced it to him. I know that he's friend requested. I mean, I'm sure we're friends. Or I don't even know if I've accepted him because I was just so mad. There's a part of me that's mad, but there's a part of me that's like, you know what? I forgive you. I can't just hold this grudge for the rest of my life. We're humans. We make mistakes. Let's just be adults and move on. And I'm sure he's seen it. We haven't communicated about it. I mean, I've really never had any one-on-one conversation. We haven't talked about girls. We haven't talked about sex. We haven't talked about how do you shave? You should wear deodorant. I mean,
what about work? You guys ever talk about that?
No.
No.
My father is the hardest working man in the world, but he is the dumbest businessman in the world.
What makes him the dumb businessman?
So he's got that old school mentality of, you know, it's got to be his way, right? And so if I advise something to help his business grow, it's either he's older than me, so he has the upper hand. It's just a very old school way of thinking. Because I'm older, I'm better. Because yeah. I'm older, I'm more experienced. Hence, I'm smarter than you. That's one of the reasons, one of the only things I've really lied about my whole life has been my age. Because people associate age with experience. And if I show up to a business meeting and I'm like, yeah, I'm this 22-year-old kid trying to sell you a six-figure agreement to buying chef coats, there's a lack of credibility maybe because of my age, right? But then when I start name-dropping, oh, I've worked with Samuel Adams, Dunkin' Donuts, you know, and they're like, yeah. Okay, maybe we'll listen to him. And so,
it was like that. I remember spending, it was upwards of $1 million on furniture for office space in New York. And when they asked me, the designers, what do you want the look to be? I didn't really give them a look. What I said was, I'm 22 years old, just create a furniture and a look experience in here that would keep people from seeing what my age was. So instead of expressing who I was through the atmosphere or what I wanted the atmosphere to do for our company, I said, cover this thing up that I thought was a big stain on who I was. I get that.
Yeah.
Wow. And your mom, you guys close?
I'm really close to my mom. I actually visited her a couple days ago. I love my mom to death. She's probably the only person that's She is my family.
All those coats with you. I could see
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, we did it together, man. She helped me wash all those coats, fold them, iron them.
Boy, is she proud of where you are now?
She's very proud.
Yeah? How do you know?
She tells me. She tells me. And I love her. She's the one person that was there for me.
So you said at the earlier part of this interview that you cared about money. You worked hard to make money. You were doing it. You were starting to actually bring in money. You have a team. You're growing. You have customers. Why did you then become depressed? What led to the depression?
So my whole life, I mean, growing up, everyone knew they're like, oh, he's going to make a lot of money. And people would say, you know, Z, money's not going to really make you happy. And it's such a cliche thing and you hear it all the time. And so I was just like, yeah, totally. Yeah, money's not going to make me happy. I would just go with what they were saying, and that's not how I truly felt until about 2 years ago, where I was making good money. I live in a beautiful place in downtown. I have everything. If there's something I want to buy, I don't go into my bank account. I just buy it. Like, I don't think twice about it. If there's a problem, I solve it. And it's that easy. And I, you know, I did well the last, you know, almost 7 years now in business. And I was just like, I woke up one morning and I said to myself, what the hell am I doing with my life? Why did I start this company? And the answer was simple. I started it to make money. There was no why. There was no other reason behind it. It was solely to make money.
There was no love for polo shirts and chef coats or any of that. It was just, this is a means to an end and I'm going to jump in.
Yeah. Okay. I was just money hungry. I wanted it more than anything in the world.
Okay. And so... And you got it, or you're starting to, then what's the
problem?
Yeah,
and I was starting to, and I was doing well, and then I was just like, shit, I don't think, I'm not happy. Why am I selling these coats? What purpose am I solving? Am I helping the world? How am I giving back and contributing to society? And I wasn't. I wasn't doing anything. I was partying. I was having fun. I was enjoying the lifestyle that I had built. And it just didn't make me happy. And so it took me a long time, you know, over the last 2 years. It's still, I think depression is something that you live with. It comes and goes. And I'm sure I've had a lot of phases during, you know, the last 7 years of starting a company, where you kind of, you wake up every morning and why am I doing this? I mean, I remember there was a point where I had a really nice purchase order sitting on my desk, several thousand dollars. I never called them.
Because you didn't care anymore.
I didn't care.
That's what depression feels like. Or that's how depression expresses itself at times, isn't it?
Yeah, I just didn't care.
And like, so did you have the blahs where you just wake up in the morning and didn't care about anything and just ignore everything that was on your work list?
Yeah, I would just say, I'll just delegate. I'd just ask someone on my team, hey, can you just manage my inbox? I set my phones to call forwarding and I don't touch anything. I just sleep in till 2, slowly walk over to the restaurant across the street, get some food, hang out, chill, think about what I'm doing, maybe answer a few emails, get on a couple calls. But I was going through the motions and I remember I would call my mom, like, Mom, there's something wrong with me. And I didn't want to use the word depression, so I didn't want to scare her or worry her. And so it was like, there's something wrong with me, Mom, and I just can't figure it out, but I don't care. Like, what am I doing? It was hard.
I get that. It's weird, actually, because I don't think you recognize you're in a depression when you're depressed. Do you?
Yes. I wasn't fully aware of it. Like, I wasn't consciously aware of I'm depressed. It's a mental state of mind where it's not external. You can't look at me and say I'm depressed.
Yeah. Plus, I feel like there's so many different kinds of depressions. It's easy to say I don't have that kind, so I'm not depressed. Like, I don't want to kill myself. I'm not depressed.
Sure.
It's like kind of like cancer in that way, that there's so many different kinds of cancer.
Yeah, it was pretty bad for me. Like, I questioned my existence.
Did you actually get to a point where you thought about committing suicide?
I did.
You did?
I did.
How detailed was your thought?
Even when I was younger. I mean, imagine, just put yourself in a position where you don't have family, parents, and you're alone. And that's hard, right? That's tough. Even with a company, it's like I gave up all my friends, the girl I thought I was going to marry, every single thing to do a startup, to grind your face away. You know, I've made myself a prisoner of my own company the last like 6.5 years or so by choice because I wanted something. I wouldn't change a thing. I don't regret it.
But did you regret it at the time?
At the time I questioned it, I was confused. I was lost. Why am I waking up? What am I doing? This money is not making me happy. You know, money buys me 10 minutes of happiness. Like, I swore to myself that I was going to buy a Lamborghini, and I will, but I'm never going to pop open the hood. I have no interest. Like, it's going to buy me 10 minutes of happiness, and after I drive it for 10 minutes, I'm probably, whatever, it's just another object. And so I needed a reason. I needed a bigger why. And, you know, it took a long time to realize, like, why am I running my company? Why do I want to wake up and take the next breath?
And how did you get to a place where you can find that why? Because frankly, when you're depressed, everything seems insignificant. You could say, well, why? To help other people. Well, someone else could help. The world doesn't need me to do it. Or I can't help enough. There are all these things that can come up. So how did you find the why and make it meaningful enough to get you out of the funk?
Yeah, I mean, I took some trips. I thought that would help. That didn't. I just spent a lot of alone time with myself. I mean, it was so bad where friends would invite me, girls would invite me, people would invite me to these parties, and I would tell myself, they really don't want me to be there, but they feel sorry for me. They really don't want me to go, but they're just inviting me as a nice gesture. I would turn every positive thing into such a negative thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was really bad. I envisioned, oh, if I do this or do this, and, you know, I wouldn't have to see the next morning because it would just be easier for me not to wake up.
So then what'd you do to find the why?
I think it just takes time. I laid out everything on a piece of paper of what I wanted in life. What are the things that make me happy? What can I do for the world? Because money didn't do anything for me. And so I realized the only reason I continue to run my business, sell chef coats and t-shirts and these things, is because it's fun for me. I enjoy it. I haven't hit all my goals. And I love working with awesome companies and different brands and helping them grow. That's fun for me. As for my life, why do I want to wake up? My sole purpose in this world is to inspire people. Because I think there's a lot of people who are in funks or, you know, just don't know what the next step is. And neither did I. I mean, I have a culinary arts degree and now I run a company, right? And I'm working on another startup and that's ridiculous. I have an associate's degree. I don't have a bachelor's. I don't have my MBA. I have hustle and I'm just going to outwork people, right? And so for my life, I want to inspire people through my story, through, you know, talking to students, visiting colleges, doing public speaking. I also want to educate people. I think a lot of problem, you know, I think the big problem is people aren't educated. People need to learn how to calibrate their mind because, mm-hmm. you know, I know you've mentioned it somewhere, mind over matter. And in most things in life, that's true for. And once you learn that, you can take over the world. I truly believe that. And so it just took some time. It took a long time.
And I do find that helping someone else is a good way to get out of a funk or finding a bigger mission, but also a mission that helps someone else. The thought that I keep having around it is, it goes back to this guy, Yossi Ginsberg, who I interviewed back before I figured out that Mixergy is about interviewing entrepreneurs. But I was fascinated by him because he's a guy who got lost in the jungle in South America, and he started to get like really bad off. I don't want to get into the details of the pain that he went through, but it was pretty bad. I think he had a spike up his butt, and that's one of the things that he talked about in details. That's one of the things I remember about his interview. But the other thing was, I said, how did you even have the courage to get out of it? And he said he was so hungry that he started to hallucinate. He started to imagine this girl who needed his help. And so he started talking to her and helping her. And by doing that, he built up his confidence, built up his strength, and was able to get himself out of that place, out of the Amazon. And so I can see how finding a bigger mission and helping other people would lift you up and would lift other people who are going through what you went through. Before we started, I asked you what's a win for you, and you didn't say, I would love it if every startup got a t-shirt or made hats through my company. You said, I just want to teach people what I know about networking. And you actually printed up a URL. Let's do that. I love that you went to your computer. Yeah, pull it back a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. There it is. It says thezali.com. That's your website, thezali.com/Mixergy. And I'm on it now. There's nothing on there because you weren't sure what to put on there. How do you continue a conversation with people? And my suggestion was, if there's something about networking or something about business that you've learned that you can put up there, that would be helpful. Do you have something like that?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll put some of my top tips on networking and how you can add a lot of value, how you can sell without selling. Okay. I'll put a bunch of awesome content up there. If you guys are interested, feel free to check it out, thezle.com/Mixergy.
Okay. And you're open to people hitting reply on an email to you or somehow contacting you?
Totally. Hit me up on any social media platform at thezle. So
you keep getting that name on everything.
Yep.
Did you get it on Snapchat?
Yep.
I'm bummed I didn't get Mixergy. I'm pissed actually that
you
didn't
get Mixergy. You gotta get on there.
Somebody out there needs to, if you can help me get Mixergy on Snapchat, anyone out there, I don't know what I can do in return, but I would be incredibly appreciative. I don't know who that person is who has Mixergy. Please give it back. You must be a fan. All right. So there it is. The URL is thezali.com/Mixergy. It will be up and running when this interview is live. Congratulations on what you built with the business. We, of course, talked about that, the Z Group, your company. We also talked about my two sponsors, HostGator, if you want basic WordPress hosting or other hosting. They do a phenomenal job of it. But if you want to take it up a notch, they also do managed WordPress hosting. Frankly, just talk to them. If you need something in the hosting world, they have it. These guys are the giants in the space. And second, if you want to come out and see me speak live, and hopefully we'll have a drink together. That's very important to me, more even than you sitting in the audience and watching me speak. And you will love it. You will cry. You will laugh. You will want to hug your neighbors. You will do all that and so much more when you watch me speak. But more than that, I really don't care about that as much as I care about getting to talk to you in person, whoever it is who's listening to me. That's why I'm going. I want to listen to you, not have you hear me from the stage. So let me know if you're going. But the URL, if you want to just go and get a ticket right now, it is leadpages.net/Mixergy. I'm grateful to both of them for sponsoring. Cool, Z. Good meeting you.
Thank you.
Good. Congratulations on crossing one big thing off the bucket list.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. How's it feel before we hang up? You've listened to the other side. You've listened. You've been a listener for a long time. Being on here, was it as stressful as you thought it would be at the beginning?
You're a good interviewer. Boy, I'm so high. I turned off my AC so the noise.
So it wouldn't make noise. Good.
Yeah,
so you're sweating right now.
I'm sweating. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
How do you feel about what you revealed about your father? Do you feel vulnerable about that being out there?
Yeah, but as my good friend Corey Blake would say, vulnerability is sexy, and I really don't have much to hide. I'm a very open, transparent person. So if my story can help inspire someone and help them, then I've done my part.
Okay. You know what I didn't get to follow up with you on? And I'll leave this. Well, the audience can follow up with you in person, and I will too when we talk. You mentioned that you broke up with someone, it sounds like, because of work, because she wasn't going to help you go where you wanted to go. Did you say that?
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about that in private too. This was a phenomenal interview. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Cool. Bye, everyone. Good to talk to you.